Rabbi Wellig spoke about Zmanei Hayom, and in many ways I think this was the most complicated shiur. The basic cheshbon of Rabbi Wellig's Zmanei Hayom shiur is, the Gemara in Shabbos has a discussion about the shiur of Bein Hashmashos. And there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi assumes that Bein Hashmashos is Geherafai and Bein Hashmashos is this tiny amount of time. And according to the Gemara in Shabbos, for Rabbi Yehuda, Bein Hashmashos is the amount of time to go 3/4 of a mil. Now, we'll probably speak in a few minutes about what the measurement of a mil is, but 3/4 of a mil is somewhere, from 15 minutes until 18 minutes, right? If your mil is 18 minutes, so 3/4 of that is going to be 13.5 minutes. So the basic cheshbon is that Bein Hashmashos is either the amount of time it takes to go 3/4 of a mil, or Bein Hashmashos is the amount of time it takes to, or Bein Hashmashos is Keherav Ayin. That's the sugya in Shabbos. Tosis in Shabbos, which if you guys have your packets, it'll be a little bit easier to follow along. Tosis in Shabbos asks the kasha. It's Stephen Maskell, Trey Tosi. It's page 3 in this packet. Tosis asks the kasha. The Gemara in Psachim has a stira, because according to the Gemara in Psachim, the amount of time between Shkia and Tzeis HaKochavim is not 3/4 of a mil, but it is 4 mil. So, what happens, right? It's a stira in two different Gemaras. So, there are two basic answers to this kasha. The answer that appears in Taisus, which is Rabbeinu Tam's answer, that Rabbeinu Tam says that there are two shkiyas, and the first shkiyah is basically halachically insignificant. Right? According to Rabbeinu Tam, when we speak about Bein Hashmashos, what we mean is from the second shkiyah, which is from 3 1/4 mil after what we have as Shkia. Shkia today is what? 447. Right? So 3 1/4 mil after 447, after Shkia, is going to be the halachically significant Shkia, which is 3/4 of a mil before Tzeis HaKochavim. So the real Shkia, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is really Shkia Shnia. It's really that second Shkia. Now, the Gon disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, right? The Gon assumes basically that the significant Shkia, right? The Gon doesn't speak in terms of Shkia Rishona and Shkia Shniya, but just to make things easier for the Gon, right after sunset, New York Times sunset, Bein Hashmashos begins right away. And Seis HaKochavim is going to be 3/4 of a mil later. The Gemara Pesachim says you need 4 mil. That means Seis Kol HaKochavim. That's in terms of at what point all the stars are out in terms of calculating the bookends for the day. That's going to be Seis Kol HaKochavim. But really, nightfall, according to the Gon, is going to be at 3/4 of a mil after Shkia. Now, the Gon's kasha on Rabbeinu Tam, the reason why the Gon assumes, we assume that this is working, just because there's a light, that means it's working? Or is it supposed to? Okay. So, Rabbi Josh Fug is the technology mumcha. I don't know anything about technology. So, the Gon's question that he asks on Rabbeinu Tam is a question of hachush machesh. Now, what does hachush machesh mean? So what I was taught in elementary school, which is actually what Rabbi Wellig wrote in his first article in Mordechai Simon Bey's, is wrong. Right? Rabbi Wellig pointed this out in the shir, that the way he originally formulated it is wrong. Right? Usually you assume that hachush machesh means that, hey, how can Rabbeinu Tam assume that shkia is 3 1/4 of a mil after what we call sunset? Hachush machesh, there are stars that are out long before that. It's already pitch black. So therefore, it can't be that the halachic shkia is so late in the day. Right? That's the standard explanation of hachush machesh. But if you look inside in the Bir Hagra, and we have it in the packets, I don't think I'm the only one here with packets, so. Okay, in the packet on page 8, you have the Bir Hagra, inside. And the way the Goyin says Hachush Machish is twofold. The Goyin's comment of Hachush Machish is A, that the day is supposed to be symmetrical. In other words, the beginning of the day, the amount of time between Alos HaShachar and Hanetz HaChama is supposed to equal what we have at the end of the day. It's supposed to equal what we have between Shkiyas HaChama and Tzeis HaKochavim. Right? That, well... So the Goyin's Kasha of Hachush Machish is, it's not true. Rabbeinu Tam seems to be assuming that the day is all symmetrical. Frek the Gon, Hachush Machish. What we see, right, is that from Amud HaShachar until Hanetz HaChama is Shir Godo Harbe Ma'od Al Tzeis HaKochavim Achar HaShkia. Tzeis HaKochavim after Shkia is pretty quick. But from Amud HaShachar until Hanetz, that's going to be longer. And if you assume like Rabbeinu Tam, everything is supposed to be symmetrical. That's the first kasha of Hachush Machish according to the Goyin.
I don't understand. They're obviously a different shira. Amud HaShachar is the first light.
Right.
The Kochavim is not the last light. It's the Kochavim is the first stars.
Tzeis HaKochavim is when the stars come out, but Rabbeinu Tam is assuming that it's symmetrical. Frek the Gon, right? My raya against Rabbeinu Tam is Hachush Machish, that you can't assume that. Again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, let's say we made this calculation of 72 minutes. That's a standard Rabbeinu Tam calculation. Where does 72 minutes come in? Because if a mil is 18 minutes, right? 18 times 4, there's supposed to be 4 mil until real Tzeis HaKochavim is going to be 72 minutes. 72 minutes after sunset is going to be Tzeis HaKochavim. And the standard calendar will tell you that Amud HaShachar, according to, and Rabbeinu Tam seems to be assuming this way, Amud HaShachar is going to be 72 minutes before, right, sunrise. Frekta Goyin, it's not true. Right? In the morning, you could wake up and you could have a basic sense of when Amud HaShachar is. Amud HaShachar, I don't know why the Goyin seems to have a basic sense, because in our calendars, they have like 6 or 7 different versions of when Amud HaShachar is. But the Goyin assumes Amud HaShachar corresponds to something that you could see. The darkness begins to become lifted. And there's far more time between Amud HaShachar and Hanetz HaChama than there is between Shkia and Seis. That's one kasha of Hachush Machish. The second kasha that the Gon asks of Hachush Machish is that if you live very far up north, and for example, you live in, right, Rabbi Blake has an article about keeping Shabbos in the polar regions, right, or keeping Shabbos in outer space if you're more inclined to do it that way, right? You could be in situations that the sun, that there is almost no darkness at night, and in some places, right, for some times of the year, there is absolutely no darkness at night. Now, the Goyin asks, "B'medinos hanotin l'tzafon, amud hashachar mascho b'kayitz b'chatzi halayla, imkein ein seis hakochavim klal b'kayitz." The Goyin's kasha on Rabbeinu Tam is, if you go very far up north, again, the Goyin is assuming that Amud HaShachar is something that's discernible. You could tell when the darkness begins to become lifted in the morning. Therefore, you go very far up north, so I know when Amud HaShachar is. Amud HaShachar, say, is 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, that's Amud HaShachar. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's possible that it won't be Tzeis HaKochavim yet by the time you have Amud HaShachar. Because if Tzeis HaKochavim has to be 4 mil after astronomical Shkia, so let's say Shkia is like in Gateshead, Scotland, right? They finish Tisha B'Av around midnight. So let's say Shkia is 11:30 at night. So you have 4 mil after that is going to be your Tzeis HaKochavim for Rabbeinu Tam. So that's going to be sometime like
12:42.
No, 4 mil after, well.
And the sun came up 12:30.
Yeah.
So
you end up in trouble, right? This is the cheshbon of the Goyin. So the Goyin's question of Hachush Machish is that in some medinos, which are far up north, you have Tzeis HaKochavim, right, will be after Amud HaShachar. That's impossible. It can't exist. Hachush Machish.
How is that a kasha either? Because in some places you don't have sunset.
Correct.
Hachush Machish.
Right. So the Goyin, right, that's a strong. When I was reading this Goyin, I was bothered by that. The Goyin does not seem to be. I don't think he knew about these polar regions when the sun never sets. I mean, That's all I could say in defense. I don't know.
Maybe you would just say, oh, so it must be that it's proportional minutes. In which case, as long as you have some stars, whatever.
The basic question is that hachush machesh. Now, let's take the sheet of the Gon. Okay, we'll focus for a few minutes on the Vilna Gon Shita. Again, according to the Vilna Gon, the second you have astronomical Shkia, which today is, what, 447? So right after 447, it's going to be Bein HaShmashos, and 3/4 mil after that, it is going to be Zeis HaKochavim. That's the basic issue. Now, the Gon himself is assuming that this varies based on time and place. The shear of 3/4 mil is only instituted, the Gon says, if you live in Eretz Yisrael, and if it is Bimei Nisan. That's the only time that you have the real shear of 3/4 mil, which is what, 13 and change.
Dafka
the equinox in Eretz Yisrael. That's the Gon's assumption. Now, Frecht Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky, right? That hachush machish the shita of the Vilna Gon, because you can't tell me that, right, again, nightfall tseis hakochavim is supposed to be, right, kimashmao tseis hakochavim, when the stars come out. And Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky walked outside and he says, well, when is it that the stars come out? Well, stars come out, he gave you numbers between 22 and 26 minutes in Yerushalayim. Now, 22 and 26 minutes is long after the 13 and a quarter minutes that you're supposed to have.
Is it in the quarter?
13 and a half. Right, you know. Okay? So, hachush machish, the
Shabbos, 15 seconds
until Shabbos. Right, so hachush machish, so this is Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky's question, that hachush machish, the shita of the Vilna Gon. So now, there are two ways of answering this question. One way of answering the question is by saying that we disagree with one detail in the Vilna Gon. This is what Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky said. Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky himself said, hey, the stars are coming out 22 to 26 minutes after sunset. What does that mean? So he said, you know, I agree with one opinion in Tosfos. That Tosfos said that the Bein Hashmashos of Rabbi Yossi is Misacher after the Bein Hashmashos of Rabbi Yehuda. Again, according to Rabbi Yossi, Bein Hashmashos is Keherifayin. It's a second. One opinion in Tosfos says that this Bein Hashmashos, which is a second, does not happen right after Rabbi Yehuda's Bein Hashmashos is completed. Rather, there's some time lag between them. So you're right, Zakt Bichil Michal Tukuchinsky. According to Rabbi Yehuda, nightfall should occur 13 minutes and change. Aye, but we see the stars at 22 minutes. That's because when the Gemara said that the star is coming out, makes it Laila, the Gemara is going according to Rabbi Yossi, not according to Rabbi Yehuda. And according to Rabbi Yossi, sunset, according to Rabbi Yossi, Tseis HaKochavim is Misacher after the Tseis HaKochavim of Rabbi Yehuda.
Why would there be a 10-minute lag between the
Well, Tysus doesn't tell us when, how long the lag is. Tysus just has this line that's Misacher. Rabbi Chiyo Michal says, like, look at the Chush. See when the stars come out. Stars come out 22 minutes, right? So you have your 9-minute lag, your 13-minute lag, whatever it is, right? And that's the Misacher Harbei. Because according Rabbi Yehuda is different than Rabbi Yossi, this is the position of Rabbi Chiyo Michal Tukuchinsky. Now, Rabbi Willig points out, right? It's really kedai, by the way, if you want to just get a good overview of Rabbi Willig's shiur, read the piece in Am Mordechai Maseches Brachos. The piece in Am Mordechai Maseches Shabbos is very complicated. The piece in Am Mordechai Maseches Brachos. It's in the packet, page 22, 23, 24. The right parts Aleph of that shear, Beis, and Gimel is most of the shiur that Rabbi Wolle gave, right? Part Dalet is very mathematical. Rabbi Wolle has like this mathematical mind. He works very quickly. I didn't chap it until like reading it 3-4 times. But the first three parts of that article are very kedai to read.
So Tukhachinsky says in the Maskana, night starts whenever we can see stars.
Right. According to Rabbi exactly. So Rabbi Chiyo Mecho is assuming that nightfall means when you see stars. Now, this issue relates to Rabbi Chanan. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in the Kobet Shirim at the beginning of Psachim points out that the question, actually Rabbi, the last year that we had, Rabbi Ricky Weiss, also addressed this question, Siba versus Simen, right? Is the stars, does that create nightfall, or is it a Simen that there is nightfall, but nightfall is halachically something else? Right. Now, if I assume that it's a what we would call a simen, that halachically nightfall is something else, it's not when actually you see stars, so it's possible that the shear of nightfall is something to do with degrees of darkness. One could argue that when the Gemara says you need to see three stars, what that means is the degrees of darkness where three stars would appear, that is nightfall. And that is a way of defending the Vilna Gaon. In other words, right, if you look at all these calendars, you'll see like 9.8 degrees, 16.1 degrees are different measures. Those are different measures of the amount of darkness. And a possible defense of the Vilna Gaon is that we're not really concerned with when you actually see stars. Rabbi Yechiel Michel's assumption that you walk outside and you see stars between 22 and 26 minutes in Yerushalayim, which for us in New York equals 28 to 34 minutes. Rabbi Wolleg, apparently Moresh HaKolo, one summer did these experiments. He took the guys, they went outside, they looked, when did they see stars? But it doesn't matter, right? Because it's not actually when you see stars, it's when the stars could theoretically appear, which is based on degrees of darkness somehow.
What does it mean if they could theoretically appear?
So what does that mean, it could theoretically appear?
You know,
so Dr. Leo Levy, who is the who wrote the book Zmanim and Halacha, Dr. Leo Levy had the, I don't know, NASA engineers or some people working in the Israeli army who are experts in stars, and they went out and they actually saw stars. If you know where to look and you know how to look for stars, they actually saw stars at 14 minutes. Now that's pretty close, okay? One could argue that even their Bekiyas is not exact. Right? But we're getting a lot closer. So the other way of defending the Vilna Gaon from this kash of Rabbi Chiyo Mecho Tukhachinsky, that HaChush Machesh, you don't have to say that's Tolian Machlokis Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi. Right? You could say better, you need experts to look for the stars.
The pollution and
the lights. Right. So obviously, Rabbi Willig points us out in that article, you have to look in an area that there's nothing obstructing your view. You have to go up to Moresh HaKolel. Even in Moresh HaKolel, there is some stuff that obstructs. There's some light outside. You need a perfect area, but
you managed to get them to turn off all the lights.
There are mumchim who can do this.
What's
Rebbe Chanan? Rebbe Chanan's approach is that Rebbe Chanan questions whether Seis HaKochavim actually creates nightfall, or whether Tzeis HaKochavim is a simen for nightfall, but nightfall is defined by degrees of darkness. Now, Rabbi Willig points out in this article that there are two other issues that relate to the Machlokas, Rabbi Nutam and the Vilna Gaon. One issue is Zman Kriya Shema, or any halachic time. When do we calculate, how do we calculate halachic times? Right? So in the calendars, you have the Zman Kriya Shema of the Magen Avraham, the Zman Kriya Shema of the Gaon. The Zman Kriya Shema of the Magen Avraham is calculated based on Amud HaShachar, but the Zman Kriya Shema of the Gaon is calculated based on Hanetz HaChama. Now, there's one other thing that has to be factored in, which is the Gemara in Psachim tells us that Chatzos is exactly the halfway point of the daytime, when the sun is on top of everyone's head. Now, according to the Vilna Gaon, the day is not symmetrical. In other words, Amud HaShachar in the morning is going to be, there's much more time between Amud HaShachar and Netzach Hama than there is between Shkia and Seis HaKochavim. Right? So the day is oblong. It's just, it's not symmetrical. And the Gemara says the Chatzos is obviously the halfway point of the day. So how can you have a symmetrical day? How can Chatzos be the halfway point? Obviously, we're not going to calculate the day for the Vilna Gaon from Amud HaShachar, because if you calculate from Amud HaShachar, then your Chatzos won't be, you have from Amud HaShachar until Tzeis, right? So no. Your Chatzos won't be halfway when the sun is right on top of people's heads.
Oh, that last...
The last point, when the sun is right on top of people's heads. The Gemara in Pesachim Daf
Yud Aleph. The Gemara says
that the Chatzos is when the sun is directly above. Yeah, the Gemara says that the Tos, B'yom HaMa'unan, in terms of... So, obviously, for the Vilna Gaon, the calculation of the day is based on Netzach Hama until Shkiyas HaChama. So, therefore, Zman Kriyashma is 3 hours after Netzach Hama.
So, that Gemara established clearly there can be no Shita which establishes Chatzos otherwise than when the sun is directly above.
Correct. Chatzos should be without question. Okay, we won't spend that much more time on Zmani HaYom, we have to move. But the first issue that relates to this question is how you calculate Zman Kriyashma. The second issue that relates to this question, Rabbi Wallig assumes, is the length of a mil. Again, this idea that the Gemara Pesachim says that you have 4 mil between Shkiyas HaChama and Tzeis HaKochavim. And according to the Gemara in Shabbos, you have 3/4 of a mil between Shkiyas HaChama and Tzeis HaKochavim, but how long is a mil? Well, this is also based on the Gemara, where the Gemara says that there are 40 mil that a person could walk in a day. But the question is, those 40 mil, does it include the amount of time from Amud HaShachar until Hanetzach Hama and the time from Shkiyah until Tzeis? Right? Or, when we speak about 40 mil, are we saying that there's 40 mil without Amud HaShachar until Hanetzach Hama and without Shkiyah until Tzeis? Effectively, the question is, when we divide the day up and there are going to be 12 hours in the day and 12 times 60 minutes in an hour would be 720 minutes, is that 720 minutes divided by 40, or is it 720 minutes divided by 32? Because you have to remove the beginning chunk of the day and the end chunk of the day. And this issue also, Rabbi Wallig assumes, depends on the machlokas between the Vilna Gaon and the Vilna Gaon and Rabbeinu Tam, that if you divide 32 into 720, you end up with a mil that is going to be 22 minutes and a change. That would be according to Rabbeinu Tam. Right. That's the assumption. Again, this is the part. This is part Gimel of that article, part Gimel and Dalet. Right, he wants to say that according to Rabbeinu Tam, the shear of a mil will be 22 minutes, but according to the Vilna Gaon, the shear mil is going to be, right, the Vilna Gaon is saying that the only thing that ever matters is from Hanetzach Hama until Shkia.
Is that because the Gaon rejects the Gemara, which says that there's 4 mil between Shkia and Tzeis?
Well, he doesn't reject it. He just assumes that Gemara is talking about something that's irrelevant halachically.
Right. So therefore, he can't say that it includes that because
it has. So memela, the 40 mil according to the Gaon, right, is going to be 40 mil from Hanetzach Hama until Shkia, and that will give you a mil of 18 minutes. Right, so for the... Rabbi Willig's assumption, this is just an assumption of Rabbi Willig, is that because for the Gaon, Amud HaShachar is pretty much irrelevant, right, in terms of calculating the time, so our calculations always begin from Hanetz. Okay, so basically what we're focusing on is Taisvis. Right, the things to look at are Simon Beis in Am Mordechai in Meseches Brachos And there is also the last page of this packet, Zmanei Tefillah, is an article that Rabbi Willig wrote in English. Rabbi Willig spent some time at the end of the shiur in terms of the other Zmanim of the day, which is important to know. Like Misha Yakir Es Chaveira, we have no idea what that shiur is. When you could recognize your friend, you don't know how close you have to know this friend, you don't know exactly what four amos is. It's hard to evaluate what Misha Yakir is. The issue varies between 35 minutes, as was Moshe's position, until the Prima Gadim assumes that's going to be 66 minutes before sunrise is going to be Misha Yakir, according to the Prima Gadim. Yeah?
I think in the back here there's a little bit of confusion about that, the last point about the length of the day and how that
rests. Basically, according to Rabbeinu Tam, Amud HaShachar is significant. And just in a nutshell, Amud HaShachar is significant, Seis HaKochavim is significant. So when I talk about the bookends of the day being Amud HaShachar till Seis HaKochavim, and that's going to be my 40 mil. But people don't start walking the second of Amud HaShachar. Right? When the Gemara says that, right, the amount that you walk during the day is 40 mil, what that probably means is that you're starting your walking at Neitz HaChama. So the 40 mil day is going to be 40 minus 8. We'll subtract 4 mil from the beginning of the day and 4 mil from the end of the day, 4 mil from Amud until Neitz, and 4 mil from Shki until Tzeis. So you end up with 32 mil. 32 into 720 will give you 22 minutes and change for a mil. By the way, that would mean that according to Rabbeinu Tam, Tzeis HaKochavim has to be 4 mil after Shkia, but a mil is 22 minutes. So Tzeis HaKochavim is going to end up being 90 minutes after, right? 90 minutes after sunset, not what we usually assume for Rabbeinu Tam, that it's 72 minutes after sunset. Right? That's Rabbi Willig's Raya, that halachically we don't follow Rabbeinu Tam at all, because no one keeps a 90 minute. Everyone who says that they're keeping Rabbeinu Tam keeps 72 minutes. No one keeps 90 minutes. So therefore, Rabbi Willig assumes that the poskim completely, even though Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avram, Rabbeinu Tam was really accepted among poskim. Shulchan Aruch, Magen Avram, Taz, they all assumed like the Rabbeinu Tam, but the Vilna Gaon, and by the way, the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, but he changed his mind when he wrote the Siddur. Lubavitchers were fortunate. Prefer the Alter Rebbe's Siddur over the Shulchan Aruch. So, the halacha basically changed. How did this happen? Unclear. It's unclear how the change occurred, but today it's clear from the fact that people are not keeping 90 minutes for Motzei Shabbos that we're not assuming like Rabbeinu Tam. Right? Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, you have to have a 22 minute mil. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the complicated proof, which that's a second proof that he has. Rabbi Wolk had a second. That's Ostalim in that article, that Mincha Ketan, or the Gemara says, is supposed to be only 3 hours after Chatzos, and yet when you make the calculation, you end up with like 4 hours and change. We could do it on the board, but I don't think it's worth it. Fine. Well, again, according to the Gaon, after Shkiyas HaChama, Vada Yom is over. After New York Times sunset, right, it's no longer Vada Yom. It might not be Vada Laila until a few minutes later, based on Bein HaShemasho, so Vada Yom has completed. The assumption is that when people walk, they walk in Vada Yom. Mm-hmm. So they're walking from Hanetz HaChama until, right, and for the Gaon, that will be 40 mil, which is 40 into 720, that will give you your 18-minute mil. It's going to be 32, and that will give you a 22 and change. No, they're not. Everyone is... Shkia is an astronomical reality. You look at the sunset... Again, there's some question. There's like a two-minute variation. There's something Rabbi Willig deals with in that other article. But Lamaisa, you know, Shkia, we pretty much know. Yeah, Mr. Right.
And everyone agrees to say Sisvaya Laila.
Everyone, for our purposes, everyone agrees to say Sisvaday Laila, even though Rabbi Chiyo Mecho Tukachinsky says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, says isn't right, that this point, that according to Rabbi Chiyo Mecho Tukachinsky, that Rabbi Yossi is going to be Misacher Harbe. So you could have something that will call it Seis HaKol Chavim, but it's not going to be Vaday Laila if you hold like Rabbi Yossi. Yeah.
You said that according to Tom, 40 mils the amount that somebody could walk in a day. So if, saying those Rabbi Tom also are, if you see that you're walking from Nates till Shkia, so when
Well, you are walking from Neitz to Shkia, but for Rabbeinu Tam, the day is halachic. The day is a larger halachic construct.
If you had even walking from Alos till Tzeis, then you would be able to walk 40
miles. Right, but people don't walk that. Fine. Okay, so just the last issue that I was trying to touch on are the other Zmanei Hayom, which Rabbi Wallach addresses in that English article in the back of the packet. The most significant of the other Zmanim, which we really have no idea what is called Misha Yakir Es Chaveiro. It is relevant, actually, right now. Right? This morning, sunrise was 7:19 and change. For most people who do not go to yeshiva, so it makes davening Shacharis a little bit complicated, because you're going to be davening Shacharis before sunrise. So at what point can you start davening Shacharis? Now, in some ways, this question is like, it's a red herring, because theoretically you can daven shacharis from Amud HaShachar. However, right, the bracha of Yotzer Or should not be said until Misha Yakir. When it comes to wearing tefillin, right, the pasuk by tefillin says V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra alecha. Tefillin depends on seeing, so therefore tefillin also, we assume in Shulchan Aruch, you should not put on until Misha Yakir. Talus is a machlokas between the Ramah and the Magen Avraham, whether Talas begins at Amud HaShachar, Talas begins at Misha Yakir also. The Ramah assumes that Talas begins at Amud HaShachar. The Magen Avraham disagrees with the Ramah. The Mishnah Berurah says that the Ramah is rejected halachically, that we all follow the position of the Magen Avraham, which means that only from Misha Yakir can you put on Talis, Tefillin, and say the Bracha of Yotzer Ar. So really, you shouldn't be davening before Misha Yakir. But what's Misha Yakir? Halachically, it's uncertain. It's, according to Rav Moshe, it was around 35 minutes before sunrise.
In Yerushalayim,
the poskim in Yerushalayim assume it's around... No, 35 minutes is Rav Moshe Shir for New York.
All year round?
Pretty much. Ramosha says it varies, but he doesn't tell us what it varies according to. He says it varies 35 to 40 minutes. The Isha Avraham Buchach thinks that varies according to how clear the day is. He writes that if it's a snowy day, apparently you could see further than on a not snowy day because of the white helps you see better. Maybe some people understand this. I don't know.
Because the snow reflects the light.
So, according to Isha Avraham Buchach, it varies based on every day and the climatic conditions of the day. It's not based on, like, calendar stuff. The Isha Avraham Buchach. Okay. He's in the back of Shulchan Aruch. Now,
okay.
Reb Moshe's 35 to 40 minutes, that's just where Moshe felt Misha Yakir is. He walked outside, like, I guess there's some guy who he felt is his Misha Yakir person. He could recognize him at 35 minutes after. The poskim in Yerushalayim assume it's around 50 minutes, 50 to 60 minutes. The Prima Gadim writes in one place that it's 66 minutes before sunrise. That's Misha Yakir. He gives you a cheshbin that 6 minutes after Amud HaShachar is Misha Yakir. That's the Prima Gadim's. So it'll be 66 minutes before sunrise, assuming, as the Prima Gadim does, a 72-minute, right? Assuming that a mil is 18 minutes for Rabbeinu Tam, and you have...
These are minutes before
minutes before sunrise, before Hanetzel Chama, right?
So Rav Moshe is the most...
Machmir. Rabbi Shechter paskens like Rav Moshe. If you'll be here Shavuos morning, you'll see that Rav Shechter will not put on his talus the same time everyone else puts on their talus, right? He'll wait a few minutes later because Yeshiva puts up the Zmanim for some reason based on a Misha Yakir of 50 minutes, and Rabbi Shechter assumes Misha Yakir is Ramosha's 35 minutes, and he always does 35 minutes. I think that's enough for Zmanei Hayom, unless there's any other questions. Yeah. Yeah, Rabbi Wallach is very stark against, right?
Isn't there like the whole Olam, like, for like last 2,000 years?
The minhag of people was in Daven Tarati Desasri, on the Orach
HaShuk.
What?
There was Dafkan Erev Shabbos.
Dafkan Erev Shabbos, there is a...
Such a
the Mishnah Brura is unhappy with it. The Orach HaShulchan tries to defend it. I actually published something in the Beis Yitzchak once about this.
Doesn't the Baruch say specifically not an Erev Shabbos?
Right, the Bir Halach is very unhappy with it. There is a shtickle Torah that I published from Rav Hirschberg once in the Beis Yitzchak, why to daven dafka on Erev Shabbos, it's okay for Tati Desasri. The shtickle Torah of Rav Hirschberg is that Tfilas Arvis, the Gemara says, is based on Hektar Chalom Veivorim. Right? And on Shabbos, the Hektar Chalom Veivorim wouldn't happen on Friday night because they'd have to do it beforehand. So it could be that Tfilas Arvis on Friday night is going to be earlier than Tfilas Arvis any other time, so maybe there's no concern of Tati Desasri. I really like that shtickle Torah. Fine. Okay. Yeah. I mean, let's try to... I mean, I think Rabbi Willing Shear was, in many ways, the hardest shear that requires the most clarification. The other shiurim will make a few points. Again, I'm not... Don't assume that the only stuff you have to know is stuff I'm saying now, but I hope to cover most of the important points now. So, I'll say it like that. Okay. Rav Sacks gave the next shiur about Inyanei Tefillah. And Rav Sacks pointed out that there is a huge machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether the obligation to daven is a din d'oraisa or is it a din d'rabbanan. Right? The Rambam tells us in the Koteret of Hilchos Tefillah, and the Rambam tells us in Sefer HaMitzvos Mitzvah Hei, that there's a mitzvah asaseh, there's a Torah commandment that you're supposed to daven every single day. Now, the Ramban assumes that the chiyuv of Tefillah is not a chiyuv d'oraisa.
Nachmanides,
right. Maimonides says it is a biblical ordinance, and according to Nachmanides, it's simply a rabbinic injunction. Now,
thanks.
Now, what happens is that even according to Rabbeinu Tam, even according to Ramban, that tefillah is d'rabbanan, but there are types of tefillah which are d'oraisa. First of all, the Ramban himself writes in the Sefer HaMitzvos that tefillah be'es tzara is d'oraisa. Now, it happens that the Prima Gadim, Rabbi Sacks did not quote this in Shir, but the Prima Gadim assumes that a tainus is by definition an es tzara, like we say in davening today, aneinu Hashem b'yom sometimes you say, but tzara gedola anachnu, the tainus by definition is an esh tzara. So according to Ramban, davening today is d'oraisa, even though davening other days is going to be d'rabbanan. Esh tzara is d'oraisa. Point one. Point two, right? The Prima Gadim tells us that there's another Ramban. The Ramban in Parshas Emor, in the Pasuk of Mikrai Kodesh, the Ramban assumes that tefillah on Shabbosos and Yomim Tovim is also a din d'oraisa. So when the Ramban is saying that tefillah is d'rabbanan, it's not such a blanket statement. What it means is that most often tefillah is d'rabbanan, but tefillah be'ez tzara is d'oraisa, and tefillah on Shabbos and Yom Tovim is d'oraisa. And there's a third nekuda, which Rabbi Sacks mentioned, which is the Emek Bracha points out in his Sefer in Hilchos Nesias Kapayim in Duchening, that the Gemara tells us that the chiyuv to Duchen, this din d'oraisa, the Kohanim should be nosim kapayim, that din d'oraisa is true only b'shas avoda. Right? It comes from a Yerushalmi in Tainus. Yerushalmi says that there's no Nesias Kapayim unless there's Avoda. Now, how do you have Avoda? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. Right? Most poskim assume that Duchening is still Do'iraisa, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So, how do we get Avoda? So, obviously, we get Avoda because Tefillah is considered Avoda. When we daven, that's considered Avoda. So, frek to the Emek Bracha, one second. Ha Teinach, according to the Rambam, I understand that you could have a Chi of Do'iraisa to Duchen because the Tefillah, which is a Chi of Do'iraisa, the Tefillah makes it into Avoda. But according to Ramban, the Tefillah is Drabonon. How does it become Avoda? So, for us in Chutzla Aretz, it's not a Kasha because we only Duchen on Yontif and the Tefillah is Deraisa anyway. Right. But we don't talk on the Tainus Tzibur. But for you, or for others who daven over here in the morgue, in the Sephardi Shul, and they're duchening every day, when Eretz Yisrael they duchen every day, so what's the pshat? So, and for the Emek Bracha, that he thinks that the Ramban is saying that there's no chiyuv to daven min HaTorah. But min HaTorah, there's a kiyum of tefillah. In other words, I'm not under a Torah obligation to daven, according to the Ramban, but if I daven, I get a Torah points. Memela, what occurs is that we could say that duchening becomes d'oraisa because there is tefillah d'oraisa even according to the Ramban. This is one of the points that Rabbi Sacks stressed. Now, for the Rambam, that tefillah is d'oraisa. All tefillah is d'oraisa. A few interesting things come up. First of all, the Prima Gadim entertains that the din of Tashlumen should be d'oraisa, but that's true only if you miss a full day of davening. If I don't daven Shacharis, Mincha, or Ma'ariv, so then there is a din d'oraisa of Tashlumen according to the Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim, like he always does, hesitates on this. He says Tzarech Iyun. It's not clear exactly what his maskana is, but he certainly entertains that possibility. For the Ramban, there'd be no such thing as Tashlumen, obviously, which is Doraisa. Point A. Point B. The Rambam tells us in Sefer HaMitzvos, Shoresh Tes, that the Gemara has this concept of a lav sheba klolos, which is one lav in the Torah that includes many other things. And the classic example of lav sheba klolos is this din of Lo Sochlu Al Hadam, right? Which means that Sanhedrin, on the day that they kill somebody, is not allowed to eat. Losochul Hadam means lots of stuff, right? And one of the things that Losochul Hadam means is a Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yudal. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to eat before you daven. And according to the Rambam, this is a din d'oraisa. You can't eat before you daven. It's a din d'oraisa based on Losochul Al Hadam. The Rambam, Maimonides. Maimonides assumes tefillah is d'oraisa, and tefillah is d'oraisa, that means even the iser to eat before davening is also an iser d'oraisa. Now, that's an interesting chiddush from the Rambam, because halachically, usually we assume the day begins at night, right? Vayhi erev, vayhi boker. And the Rambam is telling me that the iser d'oraisa to eat before davening doesn't apply to eating before ma'ariv, it applies to eating before Shachris. So you see that for some reason the halachos of day by tefillah, right, is a day of Shachris Mincha Ma'ariv, not a day of Ma'ariv Shachris Mincha. Right. The next issue that relates to the machlokas Rambam Ramban is the comment of the Magen Avraham, that the Magen Avraham notes that how much do women have to daven? Or do women have to daven? So he says it depends, right? This is a Magen Avraham in Simen Kuvvav, the Mishnah Berurah in Simen Kuvvav quotes it. You could look at it, it's very important to know. So the Magen Avraham comments that for the Rambam, that the Chiv of Tefillah is Da'iraiso, once a day, every day. So that's all women have to do. He says that Nashim are Yotzos, they fulfill their obligation of davening when they just say a little Bakasha. One time a day, right, they would say something most often in Yiddish, they thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for whatever they have going, or they pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that their children should be healthy. They'd be mekayim their mitzvah of tefillah with that one little Bakasha once a day. That's the din d'oraisa of tefillah that Nashim are Mekayim. However, for the Ramban, Zakna Magen Avraham, that the Chiv of Tefillah is a Chiv D'Rabbanon, and the Chiv D'Rabbanon is three times a day, so women also should daven either three times a day or two times a day. Right? Tefillas Arvis is a Rishus, and women probably never accepted it as a Chova, so therefore it should only be two times a day, but for the Ramban, you have to daven twice a day, but according to the Rambam, all women have to do is fulfill the Din D'Oraisa of davening of one time a day. This is the Magen Avraham's assumption. Why the Magen Avraham assumes that for the Rambam, Noshim don't have to be Mekayim the Chiv D'Rabbanan, I don't know.
The Rambam says that.
Huh?
The Rambam says that.
Oh yeah? Is Kefirish in the Rambam? Okay.
I think he says that, because there's Magrama. So why wouldn't he have to by the Rambam?
Right. So, I mean, the basic issue is that the Gemara counters this Zman Grama argument with the fact that Tefillah is Rachamei and Halavai Shisba Adam Kol Yom Kulo. The point, though, is that the Magen Avraham's Chiddush, that women can fulfill Tefillah just by saying a Bakasha one time every day, is very questionable, because the Rambam tells us at the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah that the Din D'Oraisa of Davening involves Shavach, Bakasha, and Hoda'ah. You have to first praise Hashem, then ask for something, and then thank Him after. And the women, when they'd say this little prayer in Yiddish, all they would do is say a Bakasha, probably. They wouldn't say Shavach and Hoda'ah most often. So how they Mekayim Tefillah D'Oraisa that way? And we see another case, that there's a keel of Tefillah D'Oraisa, according to Maimonides, according to the Rambam, even without Shevach and Hoda'ah, even just with a Bakasha. The Sefer HaChinuch, when he talks about Tefillah, Sefer HaChinuch says that the Gemara has this case of Aholich B'makom, Gedudei Listim, Chayos Re'os, right? If you're going in a very dangerous place, so you say what's called a Tefillah Kitzara. You basically say, Hosh Hashem Asamcha Yisrael, right? You say a very short tefillah, God, save the Jewish people, shine, that's it. Now that tefillah does not have any shevach, it doesn't have any hoda'ah in it, and the Sefer HaChinuch writes, according to the Rambam, that's a kiyum d'oraisa of tefillah. How could that be? There's no shevach and hoda'ah. So what Rabbi Sachs pointed out is, you see from here that for the Rambam, shevach and hoda'ah is a d'oraisa requirement of tefillah, but it's only there to make tefillah into a mitzvah b'shleimusa. If you want to fulfill the optimal type of tefillah min haTorah, you need shevach, bakasha, and hoda'ah. But you're going to fulfill the mitzvah tefillah min haTorah just with bakasha. Right? We have similar examples, like by chalitza. The Gemara says that there's chalitza, taking off the shoe, then there's the kriyas hapsukim, there's the rekika. Right, these are all dinim d'oraisa. The spitting and the reading of the psukim are also required by the Torah. But even though these are required by the Torah, not all of them are ma'akev. Right, the Gemara says that the rekika is not ma'akev. It's machlokas hatanoim, but it's not going to be ma'akev. How is it not ma'akev? Isn't it d'oraisa? Yeah, it's d'oraisa in order to make a mitzvah b'shleimusa. Okay, so this is the essence of Rabbi Sachs's shiur. He also spoke a little bit about Tefillas Arvis being Rishus. Right? We mentioned this in passing a few minutes ago, the fact that Mayriv, right, this is my favorite halacha as a kid. Tefillas Arvis Rishus, showing I'm out of here. Right? But what does it mean, Tefillas Arvis Rishus? So Tosfos says that Tefillas Arvis Rishus doesn't mean that it's optional. Taisa says that Rishus means Kelat Beit Filas Shachris and Mincha. It's considered a Rishus, but it itself is a Chova. In other words, you can't get rid of Mayriv for no reason at all, right? But it's not as fully obligatory as the other Tfilos. That's Tosis's comment against what I assumed as a kid. Now, the Rambam tells us that because Tefillas Arvis Rishus, therefore there's no Chazaras HaShatz at Mayriv. Another application of Tefillas Arvis Rishus is therefore there is no requirement to Smicha School with Tefillah at Mayriv. Taisus points on Daf Dalet. Another application of Tefillas Arvis Rishus is the type of Kaddish that you say. Rabbi Sachs addressed the fact that there's a Kaddish HaMafsik and there's a Kaddish HaMesayim. Right, there's one Kaddish that, there's a Kaddish HaMaskel, there's a Kaddish that begins the next segment of Tefillah, there's a Kaddish that concludes the previous segment of Tefillah, there's a Kaddish that's there just as a place marker, Kaddish HaMafsik. The Kaddish by Mayriv is unlike the general Kaddish that you have before Shemona Esrei, which is supposed to be like by Mincha of Shabbos, right? We say Kaddish right before Shemona Esrei, that's a Kaddish HaMaskel, that Kaddish begins the process of Tefillah B'tzibor. In order to daven as a minyan, so you have to be a minyan before you start davening. So you say Kaddish to make yourselves into a minyan, and then you start davening. That's called a Kaddish HaMaskel, but the Kaddish by Mayriv, that's not a Kaddish HaMaskel. The Kaddish HaMayriv is a place marker between the end of Tefillas Arvis, the obligatory part, the Kriya Shema Birchoseha part, and then between the Arvis, which is Rishus, the Shemona Esrei. Then, of course, there's the big issue in Tfilas Arvis Rishus, which is the Machlokas Rambam and Raivir, about, let's say, you already davened, and then you start davening a second time. Right? This could happen, like, Friday you daven Mincha and Yeshiva early, then you go home, and then you start davening Mincha again. Right? This has happened to people. So, what do you do in that case? So, the halacha is you stop on the dime. By Shachas and Mincha, you're in middle of davening, and you remember you davened, you have to stop. But by Ma'ariv, it's a Machlokes Rambam and Ra'ivid. The Rambam says that you're allowed to continue because Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. In fact, the Ra'ivid on the Rambam, what do you mean Tfilas Arvis Rishus? But they accepted it as a Chova. So Reb Chaim has a piece in his Sefer on the Rambam where Reb Chaim understands that even though you accepted to daven Arvis, even though people decided that they're going to daven Ma'ariv, but the Cheftza of Tefillah, that's like a classic timeline, the Cheftza of Tefillah is going to remain a Cheftza of a Tefillah's Rishus. Memela, if I started davening Ma'ariv, and I remember that I already davened, I'm allowed to continue davening, because Ma'ariv is always a Rishus, so I started thinking I'm not obligated, because it's Ma'ariv, right? And then I remember that I already davened, but Izvas, right? I already davened. So it's a rishus to continue, so I'm allowed to continue. That's the position of the Rambam. But the Ravid would say that no, since today we're obligated to offer a tefillah, which becheftes a tefillah a rishus, so therefore, according to the Ravid, you have to stop on the dime, even milf tefillahs arvis. It's interesting, Rabbi Sachs did not mention this, but the Avi Ezri, Rav Shach, in his Sefer, says the Machlokes Rambam Ravid exactly the opposite of the way Reb Chaim says it. Could have fun with that. It's a good share to give at some point. Okay. Are there any questions on Rabbi Sachs? Yeah. I think Reb Chaim is assuming that the Ravid agrees with the Rambam that the Cheftz of Tefillah is still Tefillah's Rishus. However, because there's an obligation to offer this Tefillah's Rishus, so therefore I have to just stop in the middle. If I remember correctly, I haven't looked at this in a while, but if I remember correctly, that's the way Reb Chaim says it. Any other questions on Rabbi Sachs' shir? Okay, Rabbi Brander's shir. Rabbi Brander, the first shir that Rabbi Brander gave basically began with many of the Mishnayos and Maseches Midos, where the Mishnayos describe what the Beis HaMikdash was, and if you want to build a shul, there's a lot of hashgafic insight that you could get from looking at these Mishnayos. The Sha'arim were named after people. There's a Sha'ar Tadi, then there's a Sha'ar Kiponos. Who are these people? Well, these are people who gave money, right? Rabbi Brander, right, is telling you that if someone gives money, you should name something after them. Okay, that might be a good svara. Anyway, after going through the Mishnayos and Midos, I began to know that the Mishnayos sound like there should be a certain aesthetics to the Beis HaMikdash. There was music that went on, and tefillos and shul should also be musical, should be nice. Fine. So then Rabbi Brander got to an issue that he spoke about in relative length in terms of inviting people over on Shabbos. Right? You want to have a shul. So you want your shul to be as open as possible. You want people to come and daven in your shul. But there's a problem. If you're going to invite people to come and daven in shul, you invite people to come to your house for a meal, right? They're going to end up driving back after. Is this not the Isser of Lefnei Iver? Are you not being machshel them in the Aveira of driving on Shabbos, etc.? So, Rabbi Brander mentioned a few approaches that are taken in Poskim to deal with this issue. The things to look at over here, which are important, is A, on page 9 in Rabbi Brander's packet, there's a tshuva of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that was written to Ar Sameach, giving some guidelines about how to do Kiruv. And there's also a page 10 and 11, Rabbi Brander himself has an English language article where he summarizes some of these ideas. Rav Moshe Sternbach assumes that there's no Isser of Lifnei Iver when you invite someone to spend Shabbos with you, because the Isser of Lifnei Iver by definition is that you're being machshel them in an Aveira. Over here, you have to look at the larger picture. Right? The larger picture is not that you're being machshel them in driving on Shabbos, but you're being mezakeh them in doing mitzvos. Right? So being mezakeh people in doing mitzvos Right? You can't say that that is lefnei iver. That's Rav Sternbuch's argument. Rabbi Brander felt that this is not the majority opinion among poskim. Most poskim assume that the iser of lefnei iver isn't looked at with such a broad lens. You don't say, well, you know, is it ultimately a mitzvah? And the very happens that there's a pisgei tshuva at the beginning of Hilchos Aribis, who says this svara also. But okay. But Rabbi Brander was saying that he thinks that this is a minority opinion. So what do the other poskim say? How do you get out of this concern of lefnei iver inviting people for Shabbos? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about a catering call. Right, if you're in the business of having a catering call, can you rent it out to people who have mixed dancing or something? Is that being machshel them in an aveira? So Rav Moshe showed from a Mishnah in Maseches Shviyas that the Mishnah in Shviyas says a kelim which are miyuchad for aveira, you're not allowed to give to people who are chasher on Shviyas. But kelim which are not miyuchad for aveira, so you are allowed to give them. So therefore, a catering call, you can't say it's miyuchad for aveira. What you're doing is you're giving them a catering call. Right? Now, they're going to eat in the catering call. They'll talk in the catering call. These are all permitted activities. The fact that they'll also do mixed dancing in the catering call, that's not the designated purpose of this. It's like those kelim which are not miyuchad la aveira in the Mishnah in Shviyas. So therefore, there's no iser of lefnei iver on the catering call. That's Reb Moshe's tshuva. Based on this Reb Moshe, one could argue that inviting someone to your house for Shabbos, right? What are you doing? What are you giving them? Right? So you're giving them Shabbos food, you're giving them ambiance for Shabbos, you're giving them entire Shabbos experience, you're giving them Divrei Torah. That's probably the thrust of what you're giving them. The fact that you're being machshel them in driving is a minor thing. It's almost the equivalent of the dancing and the catering call, and therefore it should be permitted. What Rav Sternbuch was saying is, I mean, ultimately it's not that different. It's just that Rav Sternbuch is saying that you don't look at the specific maisa, you look at the larger picture. Rav Moshe is saying that you look at the entire action, the entire maisa, and you define the entire maisa based on the rove of what that maisa is. In other words, inviting someone for Shabbos is primarily an act of X, Y, and Z. The fact there's a little iser tagged along that you ignore. It's like a keli which has some heter purpose and some iser purpose. It's okay to lend out on Shviyas. According to Rav Sternbuch, that he could also maybe bring the same raya from the Mishnah, but it's a slightly different way of phrasing it. Rabbi Brander did not have time in his shiur to get into the issue of mechitza, but it's an important issue, and yeah, there's an important tshuva in that Brander's packet, tshuva on page 5. It's a tshuva melamed lahoel. That tshuva is more important for Rabbi Rosenzweig's shiur, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, and it is Rabbi Brander's shiur, but it might be kedai to read that tshuva as well, the melamed lahoel's tshuva. Rabbi Brander spoke about what? Page 5 in the packet. Rabbi Brander did not speak about the issue of mechitza, but there's a lot to say about mechitza. Is mechitza din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan? Well, the Gemara tells us in Sukkah that by the Simchas Beis HaShaweva, they made a tikkun gadol, which is that they built a balcony for the women to separate the women from the men. And this should have been usher, because you can't tamper with the Beis HaMikdash at all. However, they found Hakob Iksav Miyad Hashem Alay Haskil. They found like a certain reference in Psukim to have this balcony, so therefore it was okay to build it. Zakt Rav Moshe in his Tshuvas, it's on page 13 in this packet, Rav Moshe assumes that the d'oraisa here is not only that men and women cannot be together, but rather the d'oraisa is that you need a separation between the men and the women. Because if the d'oraisa is just that the men and women cannot be farmished, they can't all be mixed together, so then you have no heter to build a balcony to tamper with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's also to tamper with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. They just say women on this side, men on that side. How come you're tampering with the construction? Elamai, there's obviously a din d'oraisa that you need mamish a mechitza. The Rav disagreed with Reb Moshe. The Rav's article is in Rabbi Brandis' packet on page 27. The Rav says that the Pentateuchic, that's his word, the Pentateuchic commandment, the Pentateuchic injunction, only applies to having men and women separated. Right, that men and women cannot be together is a din d'oraisa. Mixed seating is an isser d'oraisa. However, the requirement to have a mechitza to separate them is only a din d'rabbanon. This is what the Rav pointed out in his article. He doesn't really get into details. He wrote this article as like a public letter. You know, he doesn't get into the details of the sugya. I'm not sure how he would deal with Reb Moshe's raya from the sugya that the actual mechitza is a requirement min ha-Torah.
What's the makar of the oraisa that the Rav uses?
The makar of the oraisa is... No, he doesn't say chukos akum. Well, he deals in this article that not having a mechitza is what he calls the Christianization of our ritual. But I assume that the din d'oraisa is based on the same. This is the only sugya in Shas about mechitza. That's sugya in Sukkah. I assume that the iser d'oraisa is, the Gemara. The Gemara in Sukkah quotes a pasuk in Zechariah. It's hard to know how that becomes an iser d'oraisa, but the pasuk in Zechariah says that even by the asid level, by the hesped. He says that the biblical passage from which the Talmud derives the interdiction against mixed pews, and the Pentateuchic injunction of Lo Yira B'chal Ervas Dover deal with separation only. There is no mention of segregation. The Gemara doesn't say Lo Yira B'chal Ervas Dover there, right? The Gemara just quotes in the pasuk. You have to learn this like the COVID Rosh. I don't know. Yeah.
So how does the Rav explain
how they added on to the base of Middash.
Makes sense, but the Rav is saying it's a Derabbanan, right? So wouldn't that be problematic to add on to the base of
Middash? Yeah, I don't know how the Rav answers that Reb Moshe's major raya. I don't understand that.
Do you think we discuss an important point of in which context this is an issue?
What do you mean?
Walking in the street.
Right, so the assumption over here, we're talking about a mechitza b'shas tefillah. Rabbi Brenda does not have any sources in this packet. There's a whole other discussion of mechitza b'shas drashas hachacham. The Mordechai in Shabbos talks about that issue, that during the drasha there's also supposed to be a mechitza put up. We're assuming that we're only talking about the mechitza during davening. Now, how high does this mechitza have to be? Again, I don't think this issue depends on whether the actual requirement of mechitza is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, but Rav Moshe assumes that the mechitza should be 18 tefachim high. The Rav assumed that a mechitza is like a halachic mechitza everywhere. It should be 10 tefachim high. Right? 10 tefachim is the min moshir of mechitza, like in Hilchos Shabbos, like we have everywhere, so that's the halach of mechitza in the Beis Knesset as well. Rav Moshe got his shear. He doesn't really tell you. He says that 18 tefachim is the amount that prevents mixing from people. That's what he tells you. Now, this issue does, though, involve a teeny bit of... There is a little bit of Dvarim Begav here in terms of... There's a stira in the Rambam. What's the reason for a mechitza? The Rambam writes in Perish HaMishnah that the reason for the mechitza is that the men should not be able to stare at the women. But the Rambam in the Yad HaChazaka sounds like the reason for the mechitza is that there should be no ta'aruvus between men and women. The Hungarian Rabbonim, and there's a tshuva in the Sridei Eish that Rabbi Brander has in his packet. The Sridei Eish talks about the machlokes gedola shenifetza ba'America in terms of the gova ha-mechitza. It's on page 23 in this packet. Reb Brander only gives you the last part of the tshuva, but the Sridei Eish at the beginning of the tshuva goes through goes through that according to the Rambam in Perish HaMishnah, the mechitza has to be there so that you don't see the women. Memela, mechitza would have to be as tall as the head of the tallest person, apparently. Right? So you can't see anything. Even if you have a balcony, you would need a curtain on the balcony to make sure that you don't see. In Hungary, they made an isser against davening in any shul where there's no curtain on the balcony, because they assumed, like the Perish HaMishnah of the Rambam. Rav Moshe tries to show that we don't see, when the Gemara describes HaKol B'Ksav, the Gemara describes this Tikkun Gadol, it doesn't say that they made a curtain on the balcony, they just made a balcony, the Gemara says. So Memela, it sounds like they didn't make a curtain, and obviously the requirement of Mechitza is just that there should be no Taruvis, so therefore for Rav Moshe, 18 Tzvachim is enough. Okay, any questions on Rabbi Brander? There's a nice article by Dr. Lamb, if you guys have time to read. Dr. Lamb has a nice article about mixed pews. This is the first three issues of tradition. We're all going back and forth about mixed seating in shuls. There were conservative shuls in those years that had separate seating, and there were Orthodox shuls that had mixed seating. The OU kicked out all the mixed seating Orthodox shuls. The separate seating non-mechitza OU shuls still exist. There are a few separate seating non-mechitza OU shuls. The OU is now... men and women on different sides, yeah.
So it's against both Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik.
Right, but again, the Rav would say it's not an Issur D'Oraisa, it's an Issur D'Rabbanan. But yeah, correct, it's again, absolutely. There's an Issur D'Rabbanan to not have a mechitza in shul, for sure, b'chol ha-pachos, but there are still a few OU separate seating non-mechitza shuls. They have a very hard time finding rabbis, but that's the way it is. Okay.
Are the mechitzas that are made of glass?
Right, so mechitzas made of glass. So that issue depends on the machlokas between the Perish HaMishnah and the Rambam and the Yad HaChazakah. If the requirement of mechitzas is not to be able to see the women, so it can't be made of glass. If the requirement of mechitza is that they shouldn't mingle, so then with glass they can't mingle. You'll bump into the glass the whole time.
So there's no leeway. Either you're going to say you have to have the mechitza has to be turned all the way up, or you're going to say it can be made of glass. And you see all these shuls which have a certain height with and then a little glass on the top, but they're trying to like play too.
Right, so then there's another issue in terms of how are the women dressed when they come to daven. Right, in other words, Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva that technically speaking, glass mechitza would fulfill the requirement of mechitza, but you might be also to daven in the shul because the women aren't dressed properly. No, I don't think so. Rav Moshe writes that it's preferable. He heard that there's this thing called one-way glass, and maybe that would be preferable. But he says that if the Rav could ensure that everyone is dressed properly, so theoretically speaking, a glass mechitza is okay. The cheshbin of mechitzas that go part of the way, again, I think this coming semester we'll have like some shiurman in Yanit Sniyas and Noshim and exactly what has to be covered, but that relates to those issues. Okay. Rabbi Sachs gave the next shiur. And the next shiur is on Hilchos Kriya Shema. And again, the way you start all shiurim is Kriya Shema din d'oraisa din d'rabbanan. Well, this one should be a no-brainer, right? The Torah says that you're supposed to say Shema b'shach mechol v'kumecha, right? Sounds like it's a din d'oraisa, right? That's no questions asked. But Tosfos writes in Sota that we pass Tosfos and Sota sounds like he passed, it's like the man d'omer that Kriya Shema is d'rabbanan. There's a machlokas in the Gemara in Brachos about Safek Kara Shema, Safek Lo Kara, whether Yachzer v'Yikra or not. We paskin Safek Kara Shema, Safek Lo Kara, Yachzer v'Yikra in Birchoseha. We paskin that if you have a Safek whether or not you said Shema, you have to repeat Shema together with Birchos Kriya Shema. But the Gemara has a machlokas about this, and Tosfos in Sota, the beginning of the seventh parak, sounds like he assumes that. It's a, the Kriya Shema is a Din D'Rabbanan. Okay, so that Tosis is kind of rejected. We assume the halacha kriyishmas for sure da'iraisa. We don't know how Tosis, the Gemara writes, hilchasa. The Gemara says that we pass in kriyishmas da'iraisa. So we're not exactly sure what Tosis does with the Gemara. The scholars probably have a mahala. Hilchasa is not Talmudic, right? Hilchasa is always Rabbanan Savarai. But, okay, that's a different thing. Another share. Right. So, okay, so Kriyat Shema is Deiraisa. But how much of Kriyat Shema is Deiraisa? So the Pri Chodesh points out in Samach Zayin that there are four different shitos and how much of Kriyat Shema is Deiraisa. The first shita is that the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema is Deiraisa. Right? Now, the first pasuk, you could question, does this mean just the first pasuk with Bar Shem Kavod Malchuso? Not 100% clear according to this position how much is Deiraisa, but first shita is the first pasuk is the din d'oraisa. Second shita is the position of Rashi and Daf Beis and Brachos. Rashi says that you mekayim the mitzvah of kriyishma shel Torah when you say kriyishma shel hamita. And for Rashi, kriyishma shel hamita was only the first parasha of kriyishma. So you see that the entire first parasha of kriyishma is d'oraisa, not only the first pasuk. That's position number two. Position number three is the shita that many Achronim like. They bring a raya from the Achron being the Pnei Yeshua and the Tzlach and the Shagas Aryeh. They all go back and forth about this issue. The Mishnah says, "Lama kadma parsha Shema la parsha Svahaya im Shemoa." Right? Why is it that Shema comes before Vahaya im Shemoa? And the Mishnah gives an answer. So, Frak the Pnei Yeshua, Tzlach, Shagas Aryeh, why don't we say that Shema is Dairaisa, Vahaya im Shemoa is Dirabbanon, and the Dairaisa comes before Dirabbanon? So, there are two ways of answering this kasha. One way of answering the kasha is, well, it's not Derabbanan, right? The parasha of Vahaya Shemaya is also Deiraisa. And you see that the first two parashios of Kriya Shema are Deiraisa. That's the mahalach that the Pnei Yeshua and the Tzlach prefer. But the Shagas Aryeh does not like this mahalach. The Shagas Aryeh says, no. Right? You see from here that if you have a Deiraisa and a Derabbanan, there's no reason to be makdim the D'oraisa to a Derabbanan. The Gemara could have answered Zak the Shagas Aryeh, the parish of Shema is D'oraisa and the parish of Vahayim Shemo is Derabbanan. But the Gemara didn't give that answer. Why not? Because a D'oraisa does not have to come before a Derabbanan. Right? This is very important. There's like a bunch of tshuvas in the Shagas Aryeh. If you have a Derabbanan, which is Tadir, versus a D'oraisa, which is Eina Tadira, which one comes first, right? At the end of, this comes up always during the summer. If you daven early, so then at the end of the meal, you have a shayla. Do you bench first, or do you count sphira first at the end of the meal? Because you didn't count sphira in shul because it was too early. Then you ate your meal, right? Or even in the winter, do you bench first, or say kriya shema first? Right? The shayla could go two different ways. How much do you eat at the meal? Is the birchas hamazon d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? Right? If you ate kadei sviya, and your birchas hamazon is d'oraisa, your kriya shema is also d'oraisa, and you have d'oraisa against the d'oraisa. But if you didn't eat kadei sviya, you could have a d'rabban against the d'oraisa. Right? Or you could have with svira, right? If you ate kadei sviya, so then your benching is d'oraisa, but the svira sa'omer, we assume, is d'rabbanan. Okay, so
the whole thing about ba'avera, because you're mechuyav to stop your meal when kriya shema comes in.
Not if you were maschil behefter and you'll have enough time after, right? If you're maschil half an hour, again, many shuls do this wrong when they do early Shabbos. Maschil behefter has to be half an hour before this man.
But by the time you're home, it's probably time to.
Okay, so that's good. It's a very valid point. I don't know. So this is the third shita, right? The third shita is that both parashios of Kriya Shema are Da'iraisa, but the Shagas Aryeh says that there's no shita that two parashios of Shema are Da'iraisa because there's just no halacha that a Da'iraisa has to precede a Derabbanan. Then there's the fourth shita, which is what the Rambam sounds like, because the Rambam tells us that Kriyas Kol Shlosha Parashios Elu Harehin Shel Torah. The Rambam tells us that reading all three parashios, which is reading Parasha Shema V'Hayam Shemoa and the Parasha of Tzitzis, which we do for the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, that also, according to the Rambam, is a Da'iraisa. And you see that for the Rambam, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's an independent, well, the Rambam doesn't count it as an independent mitzvah Da'iraisa, This is the Pesach Torah, everyone says. According to Rambam, there's no special mitzvah d'oraisa zechiras yitzias Mitzrayim. Right? It's really part of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. And therefore, it would have to be said within the Zman of Kriya Shema. If you assume that Zman Kriya Shema is a din d'oraisa, you can only fulfill the mitzvah zechiras yitzias Mitzrayim during the Zman of Kriya Shema Shel Torah. Now, the Gemara says, let's just talk for a minute about whether Birchos Kriya Shema become part of Kriya Shema or not. This is a large issue that Rabbi Sachs addressed in his shiur. The Birchos Kriya Shema become part of Kriya Shema. The Gemara, the Mishnah tells us, HaKori Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hifsid, Ka'odam HaKori B'Torah, that even after Zman Kriya Shema, you're allowed to say Kriya Shema with the Brachos. How long can you say Kriya Shema with the Brachos for, though? So there are three shitos in Rishonim. The position of Rav Haigon, quoted by the Rosh, is that you can only say the brachos until the fourth hour of the day, until what we call Zman Tefillah. The position of the Smag is that you can say Kriya Shema with the brachos until Chatzos Hayom. And the position of the Rambam is that you could say Kriya Shema with the brachos all day long. Now, HaKor Mikan Ve'eloch Lo Hifsid means even if I say Kriya Shema at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, well, not today, that would be Kriya Shema Shel Arvis, but at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you can say Kriya Shema with the brachos according to the Rambam. Okay. What does this depend on? So this depends on whether the brachos of Kriya Shema are a din in Kriya Shema, or they are a din in Tefillah. The position of a Haigon is the most obvious. Rav Haigon says that what's Zman Tefillah? When can you daven? You can daven until Dalet Shalos Bayom. And Birchas Kriya Shema also you say until Dalet Shalos Bayom. Why is that? The reason is because Birchas Kriya Shema is part of davening. Now, some go very fancy with this. Right? The Vilna Gaon has the take that if you want to fulfill Smichas Gula L'Tefillah, you have to say Birchas Kriya Shema and then Shemon Esrei right after. Because Birchas Kriya Shema is part of Tefillah. That's the position of the Vilna Gaon, and that's what emerges from this Rav Haigon.
What was the chiddush of that? I didn't understand. Huh? Smichas Gula L'Tefillah means say Birchas Kriya Shema and then Tefillah right after. What was that?
Because the Vilna Gaon assumes it has to be Birchas Kriya Shema with the Kriya Shema Shel Mitzvah to fulfill it. You have to have the whole unit to fulfill Smichas Gula L'Tefillah. That's his chiddush. The position of the smag that you have until Chatzos Hayom is probably because Me'ikar Hadin Tefillah should be until Chatzos Hayom. It's just that we push it back a little bit until Dalet Shos. So that's why you could say, again, because Birchas Kriya Shema is a halacha in Tefillah. However, what about this sheet of the Rambam? You could say Birchas Kriya Shema all day. Where does that come from? So like the Kesef Mishnah, that's because according to the Rambam, Birchas Kriya Shema is a halacha of Kriya Shema. And as long as you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, you can fulfill the mitzvah of Birchas Kriya Shema. Aye, but you can only fulfill Kriya Shema until 3 hours of the day. Zok the Kesef Mishnah, that's not true. He says you can fulfill Kriya Shema min haTorah all day long. B'shachbecha uvekumecha. The Torah says that you say Shema when b'shachbecha and b'kumecha. Now, what does b'shachbecha mean? So does b'shachbecha mean when you go to sleep? B'shachbecha means when you are sleeping. Right, so we assume la halacha you could say Shema all night long, right? It's only a din d'rabbanon v'hachagodam and aver that you need chatzais, according to the rabbanon in the first mishnah. But what does that mean? Right, you could say Shema b'shachmecha the whole time that you're sleeping. So oyba zoyfrak the kesem mishnah b'kumecha should mean that you could say Shema all day long as you're up. You could say Shema. I could say Shema as long as I'm up, right? What about Zman Kriya Shema? Zakli Kesef Mishnah? No. The din of Zman Kriya Shema is a din to Rabbanon. Min HaTorah, you can say Shema all day long, and Birchas Kriya Shema is instituted on the din de Orais of Kriya Shema, which is all day long, because Bekumecha means when you are awake. Now, some point out, the Rashba has, that Bekumecha is different than B'shachbecha. B'shachbecha is a verb in Hebrew that means while you are lying, laying, whatever it means in English, while you're lying, but bikumecha means getting up. We don't say ba'amidascha, right? That would be while you're awake, but the Kesef Mishnah wasn't into this nuance. He assumes that the mitzvah Shema for the Rambam is all day long, yeah. Between the no, he does not. It's a good kasha. No, Rabbi Sachs.
Why don't you say there's a cum, or there's like a lower level cum of Kriya Shema, and even Midoraisa, it's only the first three, the first quarter of the day. But later on, it's still there's a heft of Kriya Shema, but there's no. There's no
cues. I mean, that's a question we could discuss later. That's okay. Okay, so Rabbi Sachs developed this idea a little bit further, that Kriya Shema is based on that for the Rambam, Birchus Kriya Shema is a halacha in the Kriya Shema itself. This is the Kesef Mishnah's take on the Rambam, and it goes one step further, talked to Rabbi Sachs. You see, there's a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. Whenever I do a mitzvah based on a suffix, right? For example, if you're part of the Minchas Chinuch's family, you're an androgynous, a tumtum, you're one of these guys that you're part of the whole family over here. So you want to do mitzvahs based on a suffix. You could have a suffix in Mila, you could have a suffix in Sitzis, a suffix in Tefillin. So do you make a bracha when you do a mitzvah based on suffix? And this issue is the machlokas Rambam and Ravid Keseder. They keep on disagreeing. In Hilchos Sukkah they disagree, and in Hilchos Shofar they disagree, and in Hilchos Mila they disagree. The Ravid says that you make a bracha misafik based on the Gemara in Bamem Adlikin, right? That the Gemara says Safik shall Torah by bracha. So according to the Ravid, if you're doing a Safik d'oraisa, you make a bracha. But the Rambam assumes that when you do a Suffolk d'oraisa, you do not make a bracha. For the Rambam, when the androgynous does mila, when the androgynous wears tefillin, he does not make a bracha. Right? So now, the kasha is, why is it then, if for the Rambam you don't make a bracha when you do a mitzvah based on a suffolk, so why is it that suffolk kara kriya shema, suffolk lo kara kriya shema, yachzer v'yikra im birchoseha? Why do you have to say the brachos again if it's a suffolk? But for the Rambam, so you do the mitzvah without the brachos when you have a suffolk. How come you are doing the mitzvah with the brachos, right? Very schwer, very difficult Rambam. So the answer is that for the Rambam, no. The Rambam holds that Birchas Kriya Shema integrates with Kriya Shema to such an extent that it mamish becomes one unit. It's mamish ma'akev, right? That you're not mekayim the mitzvah b'shlei musa of Kriya Shema without Birchas Kriya Shema. It's totally, totally, thoroughly connected to the mitzvah of Shema. That's what you see.
Even Bein HaShemashos?
Reading Kriya Shema Bein HaShemashos in terms of...
Read it again before dinner or after dinner.
Right. Enochanami, yeah. Correct. That would also be like a safe. Yeah. I mean, again, we'd have to factor Bein HaShemashos Shailas, we'd have to factor in many other variables, but okay, the one point I failed to mention just in terms of Rabbi Sachs is when the Kesef Mishnah assumes that Zman Kriya Shema is all day long, the Bar Plukta of the Kesef Mishnah is the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham asks on the Kesef Mishnah, what are you telling me? That Min HaTorah Yemekayim Kriya Shema all day long. It's not true. It's not true, because if it would be true, so then I have the following situation. I have all day to say Shema of the daytime Shema, and I have all night to say Shema of the nighttime Shema. That means there's no time that I don't say Shema. So therefore, Kriya Shema would not be Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Grama. That's the Magen Avraham's Kasha on the Kesef Mishnah. Now, the Kesef Mishnah himself would answer the Kasha, right? That hold it. One second. The Shema of the day is a different Shema than the Shema of the night. So it still is Mitzvah Seishah Zman Grama. In fact, the Rambam and the Ramban have a Machlokes. Do you count Shema as one mitzvah or two mitzvahs? Is daytime Shema and nighttime Shema two mitzvahs in our number of mitzvahs, or is it one mitzvah in the number of mitzvahs? Right? According to the Ramban, that it's two mitzvahs, so it's a Dover Pashat. Right, the daytime Shema is different than the nighttime Shema, so it's still Mitzvah Saseh Zman Grama, because the daytime Shema is only by day, and the nighttime Shema is only by night. The Magen Avraham would tell you he has to hold that obviously Shema is only one mitzvah, and the Magen Avraham has to assume that the definition of mitzvah saseh shazman grama is that there's no interruption, there's no time that you can't do the mitzvah. This is probably Machlokas Rashi and Tais and Daf Chav Tes and Kedushin Ayin Shem. Okay. Any other questions on Rabbi Sacks or Shir?
According to the Rambam, it's just one mitzvah.
According to the Rambam, Kriya Shema is one mitzvah. According to the Ramban, it's two. Maimonides says it's one mitzvah. Nachmanides says it's two mitzvahs. Good? Okay. Rabbi Rosenzweig Shir. Everyone ready? I think Rabbi Rosenzweig is next. Yeah. Okay, so Rabbi Rosenzweig and his father addressed the role of the non-observant Jew in Shul. And in many ways, I think this is the most cumbersome topic because there's always an interplay. This is, to use Rabbi Rosenzweig phraseology, but there's a tension that goes on. On the one hand, you want to increase the opportunities for non-observant Jews to be in shul. You want to give them as many possibilities as you can that they should engage in mitzvos in kedusha. On the other hand, right, a shul as a public place is a place where there are certain standards that we have to maintain. And if you're going to lower the standards, you're going to lower the entire status of Klal Yisrael, the entire status of Kedusha. So there's this tension that the poskim are dealing with when it comes to having non-observant Jews participate in shul. And participation can mean anything from giving aliyahs to giving them psicha to making them the president of the shul to hopefully not making the non-observant Jew the rabbi of the shul, though I did hear of a case like that also. The basic idea is you want to include them as much as possible, but you don't want to water down your own standards. Now this especially becomes acute, Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed out, and he noticed that Rav Moshe himself in a tshuva, right, Rav Moshe in the tshuva that's on page 21 in this packet, Moshe pointed out that on Yomim Noroyim, right, that's the time that you have the largest concentration of non-observant Jews showing up in shul. But on Yom Noroyim, the contrast is we have higher standards than we have all year long. Right, Rav Moshe gives you the example of the Isser of Pas Akum during Yom Noroyim, but there are many other examples as well. Right, the Shaliach Tzibur, right, Yom Noroyim, he's supposed to be 30 years old, he's supposed to be Megudel Zakan, right, he's supposed to have bonim. We have all these requirements in Aruch Chaim for the Shaliach Tzibur of Yom Noroyim above and beyond the requirements in Simin Nun Hei, which we have of Simin Nun Gimel, pardon me, which we have of a Shaliach Tzibur during the year. So Yom Noroyim, higher standards, on the other hand, we have more people. So how do we handle this tension? So what Rabbi Rosenzweig noted is that it's almost impossible to make an assumption about how any particular posek will deal with an issue, because they always, they're little knaches, little nekudos. Rabbi Rosenzweig had this shocking line about if you read enough of Rav Moshe Sternbach's tshuvos, you realize that the thrust of Rav Moshe Sternbach is to oppose intermarrieds as opposed to Mechalalei Shabbos. Right? In other words, someone who's intermarried with Moshe Sternbach would say, don't give him aliyahs, don't allow him to be a Shaliach Tzibur on any circumstances. Mechalalei Shabbos, he's much more relaxed about because of the social constraint. Other poskim, right, are not as inclined to make these types of distinctions. Rav Moshe works with a different set of assumptions. Rav Moshe's assumptions are based on, is the fellow a kofar, is he not a kofar? In other words, if the fellow is not believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's a non-believer, so such a person who doesn't believe at all, a bracha that he says is null and void. The whole bracha has no meaning. So therefore, Reb Moshe says, if a guy is a kofar, he can't get an aliyah. But someone is a mechalal Shabbos, someone is even intermarried, Reb Moshe is worried about the Isser Chanifa, he's very concerned with the Isser, right? The Gemara in Sultan Daf Memalov has this concern that looks like you're, I don't know how to say it in a nicer way, like kissing up, right? There's this Isser of Chanifa, but, right, The Isra Hanifa goes against the fact that, you know, if the fellow is not a kofar, technically speaking, you can give him an aliyah. That's the yardstick that Rav Moshe always uses. Is he a kofar or not a kofar? What? So Tinok Shenishba would certainly factor into the kofar thing, although you have to deal with, I don't remember if Rabbi Rosenzweig mentioned this or Rabbi Schechter mentioned this, but the Chazon Ish is uncertain about the status of the Apikoros B'Shogeg, right? In Yerideya Simon Beis, the famous Chazon Ish that everyone quotes, like tolerance man, Chazon Ish, right? So the Chazon Ish says that an Apikoros B'Shogeg might have the status of an Apikoros because maybe there's a positive mitzvah that unless you believe in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you don't qualify. Right, this is the comment that Rebbe Chanan Wasserman quotes B'Shem Reb Chaim about Nebuchadnezzar Apikoros. This is the basic idea is that, right, one could say that if you're a kofar, it doesn't matter why you're a kofar, you're a kofar. Chilul Shabbos, we certainly apply the Tinok Shenishba principle. That is seen in the tshuva that I showed you in Rabbi Brander's thing, the Malamed L'Chol's tshuva. The Malamed L'Chol writes that he heard in the country of America, it's not, you feel like you want to cry, you read this Jewish. Here's in America, like, no one keeps Shabbos, so how do they have Minyanim? Elamai, they're Tinok Shenishba, okay? He says, and not only are they making this in America and Hungary, where the Jews are religious, also they make on the Mitzdarif, the Mechalo Shabbos to Minyan. Even though, technically speaking, Mechalo Shabbos should be Dino Ka'akum and should not combine to Minyan, but Tinok Shenishba goes against the Mechalo Shabbos aspect. So for Rav Moshe, the major criteria, the thing to look at in terms of getting an aliyah is, and any shul role, he says like psicha, okay, that's a garnished and garnished, but there might be a concern of chanifa. But any synagogue role depends, is the guy a kaifer or not a kaifer? If he's a kaifer, he can't make any brachos to be multi people, tzibor, that's it, fine. The Prima Gadim has a more extreme position. The Prima Gadim Paskins, Rabbi Rosen, the Prima Gadim doesn't quote this from Rishon. Rabbi Rosenzweig points out that this is an Archos Chaim that develops this idea. The Archos Chaim assumes that the halachos of getting an aliyah are modeled after the halachos of being apostle Eidos. In other words, right, we know that there's this din that everyone talks about, that two brothers shouldn't get an aliyah one right after the other. Why not? So in Shulchan Aruch we assume the reason why not is because Ayin Hara, heebie-jeebie world. Okay, you know, two brothers, Oyvei. But the Archos Chaim says that no, that the reason is because when you get an aliyah, you're being meyid, that Torah is considered Eidos, and the whole group of Olam, everyone who's next to the other, becomes like a kat Eidos. And therefore, two brothers shouldn't get aliyahs, one right next to the other, because you're being meyid together. And therefore, the Prima Gadim takes this idea and he runs with it. He says, Oyvei, anyone who's apostle Eidos cannot get an aliyah. If you are a bar avera, right, and there's tshuvas, right, Rabbi Rosenzweig has over here, the tshuva, if you want to read one tshuva just to get a good overview of the entire shir of Rabbi Rosenzweig, it's the tshuva of Chacham Uvad Yosef, the Yechav Adas, on page 16, 17, and 18. Chacham Uvad Yosef in that tshuva deals with someone who shaves with a razor. Can he get an aliyah? Well, according to the Prima Gadim, you can't get an aliyah, because you're a bar aveira, and as a bar aveira, you're posel la'edos, and the posel la'edos can't get aliyahs. Most poskim do not follow the Prima Gadim. It seems to be a rejected opinion. But according to him, cousins would be a problem. According to him, the bigger kasha is the Mishnah Megillah says hakol olam l'minyan shiva afil isha afil katan. Now, without going into the social aspects, right? Isha lo tikra b'tzibor mishum kavod hatzibor, but may ikra hadin, and Isha can get an aliyah. According to the Prima Gadim, she can't. She's pasul la'edus. So what's the teretz? Teretz is the nesivus, because the nesivus says that ever Isha akum cheres sheitav katan are not psul la'edus. They don't have a shemate at all, right? So according to the nesivus, you have a yisha for Reb Moshe's kasha against the Prima Gadim. Okay. But the Prima Gadim seems to be rejected. But even so, there are other issues in terms of just specifically giving aliyos to people that you should keep in mind. The Sefer Hasidim writes in Mitzvah I actually made a mistake when I put the packets together. I photocopied the wrong page of Sefer Hasidim, which I didn't notice until last night. But the Sefer Hasidim, apparently no one else will know. Amazing. So the Sefer Hasidim says that a person who is chashud on a particular Aveira, you should not give him the aliyah that deals with that Aveira. So if someone is a chashud on Lashon Hara, you should not give him the Aveira, the aliyah, when the Torah says L'Selach Racho Ba'amecha. If someone is chashud on Arayis, so he shouldn't be in Olam Parshas Kedoshim, all of these dinim. Now, there is a discussion that Rav Ruvei Margolyes has in the footnotes on the Sefer Hasidim, that many Acharinim understand that according to the Sefer Hasidim, this is true only of someone who's a chashur on an Aveira. But someone who's mamish a Baal Aveira, in other words, if you suspect that the guy is a Noef, so then you don't give him the Aseres HaDibris, the way it says Lysinov. But if you know the guy's a Noef, you call him up to Aseres HaDibris, it says Lysinov, and you assume that he's going to do tshuva because he hears the Aliyah of Lysinov being read. And we could get very contemporary, right? This book by the Mishkav Zacharnik that he wrote, Wrestling with God and Man, a fellow who he claims to be an Orthodox rabbi who's a Mishkav Zacharnik, he wrote this book. So he says that he decided to come out public when he got the aliyah of Eszachar Lo Sishka Mishkav Eisha. It's managed to say for Chassidim. It's right there. Okay. Right. Again, the other Achrayim. The Ruvei Margolyes points out that it's a machlokes among Achronim about how you take it when someone's a chashud. So now, how do you take it when someone is vadai and avarian? So that's the issue of getting alleles in general.
You pause on the Sefer Hasidim?
The poskim quote the Sefer Hasidim. The poskim include this in the halachic discussion about giving aliyahs to people that if someone, yeah.
Is that why in Kisisa,
which way do they?
Is that reason why in Kisisa, Rishon and Sheni are so long, so we don't give it to Israel?
I've never heard that, but it makes sense.
That's the reason because of this, but we don't want to give it to Israel, because Israel did that.
Okay. Yeah.
Which way do the poskim read
that? Right, so the poskim, most poskim, I thought, preferred the way that there's a difference between the Choshur and the Vadai Balavera.
And that only gives you the Balavera.
That a Vadai Balavera could get the Aliyah, and should get the Aliyah, but a Choshur should not. Now, there is another question over here, which Rabbi Rosenzweig focused on a lot. Again, it's very hard to distill Rabbi Rosenzweig's shiur because he just does so much. But the Rambam has this line in Hilchos Tefillah of Lo Yomru La Adam Rasha Hosef Rasha Arishaso. We don't tell Rasha to do more Averos. Obviously, the fact that someone's a Baal Avera, we want to include him. Again, this is part of the tension that we establish. But then there's the question of also how much, to what extent do we say Yisrael Afa Pishachata Yisrael Ho? At what point do we say that you become such a Baal Avera that you lose your status of a Yisrael entirely? And there's tons of discussions in the Tshuvas HaGaonim, by Chalitza, by Yibum, by Kedushin, right? If a Mummer is Mekadesh, is a Mummer Zokik L'Yibum? There are loads of discussions, and it could be that each case is different, as Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed out, right? Yibum, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachtov. There's a certain sense of that they have to be on par, one with the other. Other dinim might just be based on B'nai Yisrael. But Rabbi Rosenzweig noted that there's an important tshuva that Rav Herzog has, where Rav Herzog points out that a Mechal Shabbos combines to a minyan, for sure, because Afal Pishachata Yisrael Ho, but he says it very nicely. He says he might, and even if he's a Mechal Shabbos, which is Dino Ka'akum, and he's not a Yisrael, but usually we say Afal Pishachata Yisrael Ho, but if you're Mechal Shabbos, you're not a Yisrael, you're Dino Ka'akum. But Zakt, Rav Herzog, there's a difference between halachos that require Yisrael and halachos that require B'nai Yisrael. This fellow who's a Mechal Shabbos, he himself might have lost his status as a Yisrael. he's dino ka'akom. But the halacha of a minyan is based on the pasuk v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael means that your father was a Yisrael. You're part of the tribe. So therefore you can combine for a minyan even though you're a machal on Shabbos because you're a ben Yisrael. Right? This is...
Assuming your father kept Shabbos.
Assuming that your father was not a mumr l'chal on Shabbos, right? Correct. But B'nai Yisrael might not be your own biological father. It might be grandfather, great-grandfather. It's part of the tribe, so to speak.
What?
If someone's a Tinuk Shanishba, obviously a Tinuk Shanishba, we're assuming is Dino. This halach of Dino Ka'akum does not apply to Tinuk Shanishba in any way. So if your father was a Tinuk Shanishba, of course you have...
If you're about you, but you're not such a good guy.
Absolutely, yeah. Rabbi Rosenzweig quoted, though, from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecharonu Livracha, that Rav Aaron pointed out what seems to be almost the opposite of Rav Herzog. Rav Aaron said that when we say that a mumer is dino ka'akum, so how does that relate to Yisrael HaPishchot Yisrael? That's the big kasha. So Rav Aaron said, well, there's a difference between your ma'amot as an individual and your ma'amot as a member of tzibur. As an individual, you're dino ki Yisrael. You saw Abishachot Yisrael. As an individual, you have to wear tefillin, you have to keep Shabbos, you have to do everything, even though you're a mummer. But you're not part of the tzibur anymore. It's almost the exact opposite of what Rav Herzog set out. At the end of Rabbi Rosenzweig's shir, so his father, Rabbi Rosenzweig, gave a number of very practical eitzes for how to handle some issues of an avarian in shul. Obviously, it depends on the type of shul you have. Are the majority of your people shomer mitzvos or not? It could be a totally different dynamic depending on the types of people you have in your shul. 90% are from versus 90% not from. Rabbi Rosenzweig told the story, which I really liked, about how there was a certain fellow who was a real no goodnik. I mean, he didn't keep Shabbos, Yontif, Kashrus, Taras, Mishpacha, nothing. Didn't do anything, but he wanted to daven for the Amud on his parents' yard site. He'd come to shul. So Rabbi Rosenzweig said, everyone in the sixth line, and they remember this story, he lied. He said that he had a yard site that same day in order, because, hey, the rabbi has a yard site, so obviously the rabbi will daven for the Amud, and this guy won't daven for the Amud. That way he avoided the issue of this Avayan davening for the Amud. Again, davening for the Amud, right, for Reb Moshe, as long as you're not a kofar, technically it's okay. But there are times that you have to draw a line. If somebody is doing an Aveira, he might not be a kofar, but he's intermarried, you might have to make a stand and say, no, this is dead wrong, we can't have you do it. Again, the Chacham has to paskin each shayla based on the case. Okay, so I think this takes us to the end of the segment on Hilchos Tefillah. Any questions on Rabbi Rosenzweig's presentation? Hilchos Shabbos.
Is it? Rabbi Rosenzweig is suggesting that we come up with the idea ourselves he would say that every situation is different. Than not everybody should lie about
you. Correct. I just like that story because, like, it's an ingenious way of, you know, on the one hand, not creating any Ava, not pushing this guy. You want this guy to come to show on his yard site because this is his only connection to Yiddishkeit. You don't want to say, oh, you can't daven for the Amud because you're a bum and never come to show. On the other hand, you know, you want to maintain the standards of having Erlachia daven for the Amud in your shul. So how do you do that? Right, obviously, it's mutar l'shas, but I don't think there's a shayla that this is more from Rabbi Daniel Feldman in terms of when you're allowed to lie or not. It's machlokes Yireyim and Charedim, it was an isra to lie. But the pashtus is that even if there is an isra to lie, this case would be as good as Darkei Shalom. Where the Gemara says mutar l'shas for Darkei Shalom. Okay.
I was just confused. How exactly the motion when you wrestle that Isra Panufa, how do you balance it? You're saying, oh no, really, it's no one, you know, like Chal Shabbos, if it's, then, you know, it's okay.
So Rav Moshe talks
but
about.
But he's supposed to say Iter Chanufa, so it's still Usher.
So Rav Moshe in that tshuva goes through what's considered Chanifa. If you give a guy psicha, you give him a regular honor, is that Chanifa? Maybe not. If you make him the the honoree at the shul dinner, that's very different than if you just give him a regular honor. On the other hand, Rav Moshe says, you know, the reason I didn't give you a clear definition of chanifa, because Rav Moshe and the Tshuva really hems and haws. He has two different ways to read a Taisus and Sota about what exactly the Isra Chanifa is. He's not sure. He's not sure about the guidelines. So I can't give you guidelines.
And therefore, the Isra Chanifa doesn't really stand in the way of the other guidelines.
Right.
Like a new recording profile.
Oh, okay.